Welcome to the Natural Super Kids podcast, where you will discover practical strategies to inspire you to boost the health and nutrition of your kids. I'm Jessica Donovan, a qualified naturopath specializing in kids' health, and I want to make it as easy as possible for you to raise healthy and happy kids. Let's get into it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Natural Super Kids podcast. Today, I am diving into what is such a challenging issue for so many families, and it's bedwetting. And, you know, it can be really hard to get on top of bedwetting. I'm going to talk about, you know, our naturopathic approach to bedwetting. Of course, there are lots of different ideas about why children wet the bed and different, I guess, protocols or things that you can try when kids are wetting the bed. But, you know, the truth is that it is inconvenient. It can be really embarrassing for kids, particularly as they get older. And so there's not a huge amount of, you know, good info out there about, I guess, an alternative treatment or a complementary treatment to bedwetting. Yeah, there are medications. Yes, there are things like bedwetting alarms or encouraging your kids to drink less before bed, and all of those sorts of things. But I want to dig into some of the things that the research tells us makes bedwetting more prevalent. So sort of really diving into some of those underlying causes and looking at bedwetting holistically as well. So last week on the podcast, if you missed it, I had a great conversation with a pediatric urologist, Dr. Steve Hodges from the US, and he shared his unique approach, not just to bedwetting, which is known as nocturnal enuresis, but also weeing and pooping accidents in kids generally. So enuresis is daytime wetting accidents, and encorpresis is pooping accidents in kids. And, you know, these are much more common than you might think. And I'm guessing if you're listening to this episode, you know, you do have a child that you're concerned about their bedwetting, or fed up with their bedwetting maybe, but they might also have daytime wetting issues and, you know, toileting accidents in general during the day, whether they're you know, weeing or pooping accidents. So if you missed that episode, make sure you go back and have a listen. I mean, he's done a lot of research in this area. He's got some great resources, and his approach really comes back to the fact that chronic constipation that is not usually even easy to detect, you know, there's not sort of usually obvious constipation issues, and we talk about that in the podcast, being, you know, the root cause of toileting accidents in kids, whether it's bedwetting or daytime wetting or, you know, pooping accidents as well. Using the technical terms here. So, yeah, definitely have a listen to that episode if you haven't already. But I wanted to kind of zoom out and talk about, yes, the fact that we also see constipation being very much linked with bedwetting and toileting accidents in kids. But I wanted to talk about some of the other things, you know, that we think about in our approach here at Natural Super Kids when it comes specifically to bedwetting. So let's dive in. So let's start with constipation, because we do, you know, like Dr. Steve Hodges talked about that, as I said, in depth in last week's episode, and he's got some great resources on his website and things that you can dive into as well. But from our point of view here at Natural Super Kids, we do see constipation being closely linked to bedwetting. And what we've noticed over the years, you know, time and time again, is kids aren't often coming to us just for bedwetting. So bedwetting could be, you know, a part of the picture of what's going on. And a lot of the time, constipation is probably a key concern for parents. And so in this case, contrary to what I was talking about with Dr. Steve Hodges, is it is obvious constipation. But what we've noticed, you know, is that as we resolve constipation in kids, the bedwetting resolves as well. And this was kind of picked up by me years ago when I was consulting one-on-one, just, you know, accidentally noticing, hang on a minute, as we're resolving constipation in kids, parents are also reporting that, oh, and they're not wetting the bed anymore, which is like a really nice kind of positive side effect it was kind of seen as. But I now know, you know, that there are solid reasons as to why this is the case. And if you want to know more about this, I'd highly recommend you have a listen to last week's episode. We also have a dedicated podcast episode to constipation in children, our particular approach to constipation in children. It's one of the most common things that people report in one-on-one consultations, but also our Natural Super Kids Club members. It's really common in kids. And so have a listen to episode 41 to learn more about our approach to constipation in kids and resolving constipation in children. But what I want you to know, and backing up, you know, what Dr. Steve Hodges shared in last week's episode, is that, yeah, constipation is a key kind of underlying cause of bedwetting and toileting accidents in children. So really important to address that. And what Dr. Hodges shared last week is that only about 5% of his patients have obvious constipation. And a lot of the time, parents aren't even aware their kids have this kind of buildup of poop, which is, leading to other toileting accidents, both weeing accidents and pooping accidents. And so really, you know, really just want to get that across, that constipation isn't always obvious. You might think, well, my kids go to the toilet regularly, they never complain that, you know, it's painful or things are hard to pass. It's not always obvious. So definitely have a look at the Dr. Steve Hodges website. And I'll make sure that the link is in the show notes for that, because he's got some really great information. And his book, the MOP book, which stands for Modified O'Regan Protocol, really goes into detail about some of those red flags that can tell us that our kids are constipated. So constipation is a big factor in bedwetting. The second one, and this sort of links, I guess, to constipation, is the gut microbiome in general and dysbiosis or imbalances in the gut microbiome. And, you know, if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, you know that I talk about the gut microbiome and dysbiosis, imbalances in the gut microbiome, being an underlying factor for so many of the issues that we see in kids' health today. And so when it comes to bedwetting, we want to be thinking about the gut microbiome as well, and addressing any imbalances. Now, this isn't easy to do alone as a parent. I definitely recommend you seek professional help with this, and we can certainly help you with this here at Natural Super Kids. We offer one-on-one online consultations, which you can check out via our website, so that you can address any imbalances in the gut microbiome. But there's some interesting other little points that I want to make a point of here. So Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride, some of you will know of her. She is the founder, or not the founder, I can't think of the word, but she has sort of come up with the GAPS protocol, which a lot of you would have heard about. Gut and Psychology Syndrome protocol. So she talks about, in a lot of her information that she shares online and in her book, there's she noticed a link between bedwetting and thrush and chronic cystitis in kids, and urinary tract infections as well. And so when we're thinking about the gut microbiome, we also need to be aware that there is a urinary microbiome. Now, to be honest, I haven't done a lot of reading or research into the urinary microbiome, but when we're talking about different microbiomes around the body, you know, there's the lung microbiome as well, then we are, you know, the gut microbiome has an influence on these other different microbiomes around the body as well. So optimizing the gut microbiome and working on any imbalances in the gut microbiome, really important. And, you know, kids that do struggle with bedwetting will sometimes have things like thrush. They will often like have cystitis and urinary tract infections. And so we want to be obviously addressing those. Those are all signs that the microbiomes in the body, the urinary microbiome, the gut microbiome, are out of whack as well. So they need to be looked at. There was also an interesting research article that I came across when doing research for this podcast that talked about the communication between the bladder and the gut-brain axis and how that might affect permeability, inflammation, as well as, infectious risk, so risk of infections, you know, in the urinary tract, and dysbiosis in the bladder and the urinary microbiome. So it's just so interesting, you know, obviously there needs to be more research into these areas, and this is not a definitive link, but if there are imbalances in that urinary microbiome and that gut-brain axis, then that could potentially be leading to bladder issues and bedwetting issues as well. So I'll make sure I link any research articles and pieces of research that I talk about in this episode in the show notes. So carrying on with the gut, the other thing that we see commonly in bedwetting is worm issues in kids, worm infection, worm infestation issues in kids. And of course, these come and go from a lot of kids. It's kind of part of being a parent that we do deal with worms in kids here and there. Some kids have more of a hard time and can have chronic worm issues. And I've talked about that in another podcast episode as well. So if you want to learn more about treating worms in children, definitely have a listen to episode 70. But worms can irritate the urethra, which is the tube through which urine leaves the body, and lead to both, you know, wetting accidents during the day and bedwetting as well. So if your child suddenly starts to wet the bed, there can be other things involved here, and I'll talk more as we go through this episode, but worms are something to think about. You know, usually with worms, a child will have an itchy anus. In girls, they can get, irritated around the vagina area as well. There can be mood and behavioral ups and downs with worms, and there's a whole heap of other symptoms that can be associated with worms as well. So, potentially, if your kids are bedwetting, particularly if it's just kind of comes on out of nowhere, worms are definitely something to think about. And then there is the link with allergies and intolerances and bedwetting. So research does show that there are potential links. So kids with allergies, whether they be food allergies, dairy, gluten, soy, corn, egg, etc., or environmental allergies, allergic rhinitis, hay fever, dust mite allergy, pet dander allergy, have a higher incidence of bedwetting, which is really interesting. There was a piece of research that I looked at that showed that children with allergic rhinitis had a higher incidence of nocturnal enuresis, which is bedwetting. So I'll make sure I link that research in the show notes as well. And also when we're talking about allergies and intolerances, you know, asthma is often known as an atopic condition. So a lot of asthmatic kids will be affected by allergies as well, and asthma symptoms will be exacerbated by allergies. And again, I found a really interesting piece of research that showed that controlling asthma in children with enuresis, so wetting accidents, including bedwetting, resulted in a significant increase in dry nights. So by controlling the asthma, we can improve the bedwetting, which is super interesting to me. And I'll make sure that link is in the show notes as well. And as far as what I have noticed anecdotally, I've seen an increase in bedwetting in kids with allergy symptoms. So for example, kids that struggle with hay fever or dust mite allergy, when they are exposed to allergens that they have an allergy to, they can get an increase in bedwetting. And also, I've noticed there can be a decrease when allergy symptoms are improved. So for example, you know, we might pick up that there's an allergy or an intolerance to a particular food, remove that food from the diet, and bedwetting improves. So allergies and intolerances, food and environmental, as well as atopic conditions, as I said, like asthma, are things to think about in bedwetting. And I would be really interested to know if anyone has noticed these, you know, these commonalities in their own kids as well. Let me know if you have by reaching out on Instagram over at Natural Super Kids, or you can email me. You know, you might be listening to this and thinking, oh my gosh, yes, I remember when we moved house into, you know, a house where my child now had carpet, so dust mites could have been more of a problem, that they started wetting the bed more. I would just love to hear anything that you've got to share on anything that I'm sharing in today's podcast, because yeah, I think that we need more information on this. But yeah, just sharing some of the things that I've noticed in the kids that I've worked with over the years as well. So, you know, and when it comes to allergies and intolerances, of course, there's that gut microbiome at play as well. So one of the key things we're working on in kids with allergies and intolerances is, you know, optimizing and balancing the gut microbiome and addressing any dysbiosis, any imbalances in the gut microbiome. So all of these, you know, a lot of these things are linked as well. So let's now move to, you know, the nervous system and emotions, because bedwetting can be a sign of stress in children. And this isn't an area of expertise, traditional Chinese medicine, but I was talking to our naturopath, Sarah, at Natural Super Kids, and asking her, you know, some of the things that she's thinking about when she's you know, addressing and helping kids with bedwetting. And she shared that in traditional Chinese medicine, the kidneys, which obviously are part of the urinary system, are linked with the emotion fear. So she's always thinking about, you know, whether there's any fear, thinking about the fight and flight response, what's going on emotionally and, you know, I guess within the nervous system of a child that's bedwetting. So that is an important thing to be thinking about and supporting the nervous system. And of course, as naturopaths, we have a lot of tools in our tool belt that, you know, we use to support a child's nervous system, including things like flower essences, herbs, breathing exercises, and lifestyle strategies as well. I do also just want to put a little, I guess, red flag in here that, you know, when I was looking at the research and the information on bedwetting, I came across quite a bit of information that talked about bedwetting being one of the red flags that can indicate potential physical or sexual abuse. Now, this is, you know, obviously, as we're talking about, there are so many other things that can be going on for a child. So this is not definitive, but I just didn't want to leave that out of this episode. This is not something that is within my area of expertise to sort of know, the path to take or what to do in these sort of situations. But bedwetting and other regressions in development, such as, thumb sucking, maybe being another one. So if a child is toilet trained, they're not bedwetting, and all of a sudden they start to wet the bed, they start to suck their thumb, these kind of regressions in development can be red flags for potential physical or sexual abuse. Not nice to talk about, but something that's really important to note. And when it comes to, when we're talking about the nervous system and, the link with emotions and the nervous system and bedwetting, I also just wanted to mention that wetting the bed can have an impact, obviously, on a child's mental health. You know, it can really affect their confidence, it can disrupt their social skills, it can lead to anxiety, or it can be a part of anxiety for kids. And even, there can be links, which I'll talk about in a moment, with neurodiversity as well. So there was a study that I came across that that talked about the fact that children that have issues with bedwetting have higher levels of behavioural problems. And I'll make sure I link to that study. And these behavioural problems were particularly emotional and hyperactivity, inattention symptoms. So that's really interesting. And whether it is, the behavioral issues, the nervous system imbalances that are leading to behavioral issues that are leading to bedwetting, or whether, bedwetting is potentially leading to the behavioral challenges, it may be a bit of both. We don't really know. But that was some really interesting information. So I guess the point here is we really want to support a child's nervous system and their stress response when they are having issues with bedwetting, because bedwetting can cause the, the nervous system to become, out of whack, out of balance, but also an out of whack or out of balance nervous system can contribute to the incidence of bedwetting as well. And we also know that bedwetting is more common in neurodiverse kids. So kids on the spectrum, kids with ADHD, and again, not really, it's not definitively known why. There is some information that shares that, the nervous system development of neurodiverse kids can take a bit longer. And so, wetting the bed sort of at an older age can be an issue. But we also know, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, that constipation and dysbiosis in the gut microbiome is also more common in neurodiverse kids. So potentially there's a link there. Who knows? But if you do have a neurodiverse child, know that bedwetting is more common, and often it takes them, that little bit longer, because bedwetting does resolve, that the incidence of bedwetting reduces as age increases. But we want to make sure that we are looking at these underlying causes regardless. Just because your child is neurodiverse doesn't mean some of these other factors aren't at play as well. Okay, and so lastly, I want to talk about sleep disordered breathing and, airway issues. So mouth breathing, so when kids are breathing through their mouth rather than their nose, enlarged tonsils and adenoids, can be a factor here, and can also, mouth breathing can cause or be a factor in inflamed tonsils and adenoids as well. So it's kind of a two-way street there. Kids that snore, kids that have sleep apnea, kids that are restless sleepers can have, airway issues. So airway issues can be a factor in kids that struggle with bedwetting. And there was a research that I came across that sort of cited that children over five that are experiencing bedwetting, 30, just over 30% of them had some form of sleep disordered breathing, which suggests that airway issues could be a factor. And so in these cases, we want to, you know, potentially get airway assessments through a myofunctional practitioner. I'll make sure I link some practitioners that we recommend in the show notes. But if your child mouth breathes, if they have enlarged tonsils and adenoids, they snore, they're restless sleepers, you know, they have airway issues, crooked teeth are an issue, then these are all, I guess, signs and symptoms that airway issues could be a factor. And if they're also wetting the bed, then, you know, there could definitely be a link there. So isn't that interesting? You know, it's not just about reducing that fluid before they go to bed or, you know, reward training. And Dr. Steve Hodges in last week's episode talked about the fact that, you know, reward training is a waste of time because a child is not aware that they are wetting the bed. And so we really want to be looking deeper than that. It's never a child's fault. We should, you know, really do our best to make sure that kids know that this is not their fault, you know, that there are things that we can, you know, try and work on to reduce this bedwetting and know that we're on their side in terms of getting to the bottom of what might be going on here. So I hope you found that helpful, that information. I definitely found it fascinating, some of that research that I came across when researching, you know, the information to put together this episode. And as I said, I would love to hear from you if any of this resonated with you, if you noticed any of these links and had any sort of aha or light bulb moments of like, oh my gosh, that's so true for my child. I'd love to hear from you as well. So you can message us on Instagram over at Natural Superkids, or you can email me, jessica@naturalsuperkids.com. Yeah, I'd love to hear from you. And I look forward to sort of as we're releasing this episode, we'll be talking more about this over on Instagram as well. So make sure you're following us over there. Thanks so much for joining me, and I will be back in your ears next week. Have a great day. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. Head on over to our website, naturalsuperkids.com, for the show notes for this episode, as well as a whole heap of inspiration to help you raise healthy and happy kids. I'll see you next week.